Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. You're listening to The Coffee Table here on KBBI AM 890 Homer and online at kbbi.org. My name's Terry Rentzel, hosting the program this morning. It's the semi-annual Coffee Table Book Club program. I'm here with our very own Dana Stabenow, KBBI board member and best-selling author and Women's Writer Retreat founder. Good morning, Dana. What's up with you these days?
Just same old, you know, writing books, fundraising for Story Knife, doing pretty well at both. Got a new book coming out in December, set in Cleopatra, and set in Alexandria in the time of Cleopatra that I'm looking forward to about.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. Kathleen here.
Yeah. Yes.
Is the library in your book, the library at Alexandria?
It's going to be a series, so I'm hoping that it will be front and center at pretty much all of the books.
Looking forward to it.
Great, fantastic. And also joined by our very own Kathleen Gustafson on the board and with a pile of books.
And I just want to point out that everything that happens twice a year, biannual. If it happens every other year, biennial.
Thank you.
Just pointing that out.
Okay. All right.
and not corrected by the author, so thank you for catching that one, Kathleen.
What was I looking up? I just recently looked up bi-weekly and bi-monthly, and they actually mean the same thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Like I said, the book club on the air here with the coffee table, Dana and Kathleen and I will talk about what we've been reading, what we're planning on reading, and also looking forward to hearing from you about what you're reading, what you're planning on reading, and if you'd like a recommendation for yourself or someone near and dear to you, Dana is fantastic at that
She's
game.
She's good at that game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The best I've come across.
It's like when you list the contents of your refrigerator and an app tells you what's for dinner.
Well, thanks, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
So let's just jump right in. Dana, what's the first thing you want to talk about?
Oh, gee. And Terry's sitting there with a smile on his face because he knows exactly the first book that I want to talk about. I made him read it, too. It's called Our Towns by James and Deborah Fallows. And I have been hand-selling copies of this book to everyone all year long. And it's probably one of the longer read. It's a book that's taken me the longest to read this year because I kept putting it down and picking it back up again. It's my comfort read of this year. James and Deborah Fallows, those of you who read The Atlantic will recognize James Fallows' name immediately. A friend of mine called him a national treasure, and he's such a great writer. And he's also a pilot, and he owns a Cirrus, the plane with the chute. And he and his wife, Deborah, climbed into that plane, and they flew around the United States for 4 years. And they found, basically, they were looking for communities that worked. And it was really a fascinating read because there are communities out there that are, we're talking about Rust Belt communities. We're talking about, like, there's a community, I forget which one, in Oregon, Bend, I think it was, Oregon, yeah, where the timber industry bottomed out and they're working their way back into a viable economic model. And, I mean, it's truly fascinating that people on a civic level, is that the right word, Kathleen?
Civic? I believe it
municipal,
is.
Municipal, maybe.
I believe
municipal level are actually figuring out how to get beyond any political differences that people have. In fact, one of the things that they find out, they have a great last chapter called 10 and a half signs that your community is doing well. And the first one is people are not talking politics on a national level. They're not really even talking politics. They are basically working across whatever aisle exists to bring the community back, because the important thing is, you know, education. The important thing is civic
engagement.
Engagement, yeah, but also, you know, figuring out how to get businesses there and to stay there. And so the first thing is you just, you know, and they one thing that they discovered is that, in fact, when they went to communities that they were paying too much attention to national politics, they were invariably the communities that were doing the least best.
I'm going to have to read this.
It's really worth it. But take your time.
Well, because the hackles on my back are standing up when you say those things.
Well,
because it sounds to me like you're saying, it sounds to me like it comes from a position of intense privilege where people aren't really threatened.
That's not bad at all.
Right. So I got to see it.
Yeah. Because another one of the 10.5 signs, and I really want to say something about the 1.5 sign because it's my favorite.
Okay.
But the 10.5 signs is that they are open to immigrants and that much of their workforce comes from immigrants. And you know what I did, Terry? This morning when I got up first thing is I looked up to see how Dodge City, Kansas, which is one of the last cities that are profiled in our towns, voted in the last election. And they had a big turnout, and they voted just as you might expect. And I'll just let people go and look it up themselves. And this is Kansas. So I thought it was really interesting. Anyway, that 10.5 signs, the half sign is, this is another one of the signs that the community is functioning on a higher level, is brew pubs. And I would just say, and it's really
Wait
hard.
A minute.
It's also really hard when you read this book not to view it through the lens of your own community. So, of course, especially when you come to this chapter and you're going, tick, tick, Homer. Homer has this. Homer has that. Well, we have two brew pubs.
Well, I have a confession when it comes to that book. The last community they write about in the book, Erie, Pennsylvania, is where I'm from. And I've subscribed to The Atlantic for a long time. I remember the series of articles. Quite honestly, I think that they did a better job talking about Erie in the articles than in the book, because it was a very short chapter right at the end. And it's strange because Erie has a whole lot of brew pubs. I was just there and went to about a half dozen of them, and they didn't mention that at all in the Erie chapter. Mm-hmm. And I think that Erie was and is an example of a community that's just beginning that process, mm-hmm. which might be one of the reasons why they, you know, didn't write a very long chapter in the book, and it was, you know, at the end. Because it's a community that's in transition, has always been very open to immigrants and specifically refugees.
Specifically refugees.
And some absolutely great, fantastic.
And another thing they do is they support 100% their local public libraries.
Yeah. And that's
Erie, Pennsylvania has a great public library system.
Our Towns
by James and Deborah Fallows. I can't recommend it strongly enough.
Well,
it's
I'm
like
glad you brought
my
it
comfort
up.
Read of the year.
I wouldn't call it a comfort read from my perspective, but I would also highly recommend that book.
Yeah. So that's what I was reading this year, off and on, for like about 6 months.
Okay.
Terry.
You know what? I'm going to start at the top with what I think might be my favorite read from the year, because I want to make sure I get to this. End of August, I took a little road trip around the state, visited the national parks that are on the road system, and when I left Denali and heading back in this direction, the film that they show in the visitor center, which, by the way, those little films that they show in the National Park Visitor Centers are all fantastic. Take the 15 minutes to watch them. But at the end of the one in Denali, they had a quote from Terry Tempest Williams about listening to the land. And it will, you know, tell you what you need to hear, whether you want to or not. And the book I picked up in Anchorage on my way home, The Hour of Land, A Personal Topography of America's National Parks, She writes chapters on 12 different national parks around the country that she'd visited and her experiences there. Absolutely fantastic book. I forced myself to read only one chapter a day so I could draw it out for almost 2 weeks, because it was that good and just really fantastic, really moving. I really enjoyed it. And I'd say out of the, you know, 24 books or so I've read this year already, absolutely my favorite read of the year so far.
Oh, you're taking notes. Good.
And probably now the reason I am taking notes, scribbling as fast as I can, is because I will be putting up all the books that we talked about on Stabenow.com later, just as soon as I get home this morning. It should be up by noon.
And once we have that and the audio from Coffee Table up on KBBI.org, we will link to that. So you'll be able to find all that stuff.
And I'll link to that in my page, too. Link back.
Thanks for keeping notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kathleen, okay. Are you going to open up tell us about the program at the Homer Bookstore.
Okay, so.
Because you did this last year and it was so cool.
I made the rounds, Homer Public Library book sale, Old Inlet Books, and Homer Bookstore, just to look and see, because I haunt bookstores. And just, if you haven't been into the Homer Bookstore and seen their blind date with a book, these are advanced reader copies of, well, perhaps you as an author could explain to people what that is.
They're called ARCs for short.
Yeah.
And they print, in comparison to the actual print run of the real book, they print a few of those and they get them out to reviewers all over the country in hope of the reviewers will like them and write about them and there'll
have
be advance note of them. Give them
a little
PR boost.
And so it's not lawful to sell them.
No.
So what the Homer Bookstore does is set them up on a shelf, mark them and wrap them in plain wrapper, and then write a few words on the front. Then there are a series of jars. You donate whatever you want to buy the book. I paid $5 for each of these two books.
Mm-hmm.
So then they gave me 10 buttons, 5 for each one. And you choose which nonprofit, and they rotate,
mm-hmm.
That money will go to. I know Story Knife has been a recipient of that. I think this month, I talked to Lee Post at the bookstore, and he said this month it is all Share the Spirit. So all the money will go there. But look, I have two. I have fiction and nonfiction. Which would you prefer first?
Fiction.
Fiction. Dark humor,
yeah.
It says. A New York City widow and adult son try to start over in Paris.
Ooh.
So we have family issues, we have Paris, we have French Exit, a novel by the New York Times best-selling author of The Sisters Brothers, Patrick DeWitt. The Sisters Brothers.
Say that 5 times real fast.
Oh, God.
It was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. The Sisters Brothers, and I think it's a Western, I'm pretty sure. So this is Frances Price, tart widow, possessive mother, and Upper East Side force of nature is in dire straits. Beset by scandal and impending bankruptcy, her adult son Malcolm is no help, mired in a permanent state of arrested development. And then there's their cat, small Frank, who Frances believes houses the spirit of her late husband, an infamously immoral litigator and world-class cad whose gruesome tabloid death rendered Frances and Malcolm social outcasts. All right, I'm going to enjoy this. This is French
Exit. Well, first of all, Paris.
Yes.
Something else, too, that I have to point out that at these on these shows is that they always make me feel so incredibly ignorant. I've never heard of Patrick DeWitt. I've never heard of French Exit. So now I know.
Okay. Well, I recommend, this isn't the first time or even the second time that I have indulged myself with a blind date with the book. It's just a few dollars and it helps local nonprofits and it gets you in and out of various bookstores around town. So when you're ready for the second one, perhaps we can open this one later.
Okay.
Oh, definitely.
And I also have to say that whoever wrote the flap copy for this book had a really good time.
It's clear.
And also, we'd love to hear what you're reading, what you're hoping to read in the near future, or if you'd like a recommendation for a book, give us a call here on the coffee table, 235-7721. That's 235-7721. So, Dana, what's next on your list?
Well, I'm looking down my list here, and I'm thinking, geez, let's go for fiction. Let's follow Kathleen's excellent lead. Speaking of ARCs, because I've lived a virtuous life, I recently scored an ARC of A Suspicion of Silver by P.F. Chisholm. And I would like to recommend it. And this is the 9th in the Sir Robert Carey series. And for those of you who like history mysteries and who have yet to have Sir Robert gallop up to your door, you're in for a real treat. He's a wrong side of the blanket cousin of Queen Elizabeth I. He's perspicaciously able. He's perennially broke. He's persistently in love with the married Lady Elizabeth Riddington. And if you don't think I had fun writing that line, you just don't even know me. Sir Robert is fresh off saving James VI of Scotland and I of England's life from a double assassination attempt. And with the wholehearted of covert backing of Sir Robert Cecil, if people will remember, that's Queen Elizabeth's number one counselor, he is now tasked by James to catch and kill the would-be assassin. A thoroughly creepy serial killer, may I say. And along the way, if he can figure out how the German silver miners in Keswick are stiffing the Queen out of her share of the take, so much the better. I'll tell you, I have never been more in love with Sir Robert than in this book, A Suspicion of Silver by P.F. Chisholm. And I have to apologize in advance. It doesn't come out until next month. But I've read it. Nene.
What's coming for you? Be ready. Put it on your list.
Must be nice to have friends in high places.
Well, you know, as I say, I have lived a virtuous life. So anyway, all nine of those books are great. I don't know if there are any at the Homer Public Library, but I know you can order them from the Homer Bookstore. And if you like history mysteries, if you like mysteries, P.F. Chisholm, geez, she's a talented writer. You are actually in that. They're time travel books is basically what they are. She puts you that time and place. It's really amazing.
Wow, fantastic. Sounds
they're really fun.
Interesting.
They're really fun. Great characterization.
Kathleen's looking at something.
What
do you have there?
So one thing, bookstores around this town, the Homer Bookstore, Old Inlet Books, the library, they all do a great job of including local authors. And so I picked up a few. Well, first of all, there's Kate Mitchell's memoir, The Bag Lady at the End of the Road, which I just pulled out of the news department shelves. And, you know, Kate Mitchell from Nomar, it's her memoir. The Nomar story is a family story. It's a Homer story and Alaska story. Ideas for new things to make came from all over Alaska. Here's what the tag is. How does a gal at the end of the road with little more than a commercial sewing machine create a business and help change Alaska's salmon industry? The Nomar Brailer improved the quality of the salmon delivered. Better quality helped improve the bottom line for fishermen and businessmen. So this is Kate's memoir, and I am anxious to get into it. I have to admit, I have not read it. But then I have two from Diana Tillion that I found here in town. And I might tell Guardians of the Great North Pacific Casino. And then Pioneers of Homer, which is a whole series, chapters on families and pioneers and hand-drawn maps and Miller's Landing. Look, there's Miller's Landing.
People remember Diana Tillion as the Octopus Inc., you know, lady, the artist, the fabulous artist. And people forget that she also wrote. And I'm proud to say that one of the cabins at Story Knife is going to be named for her. Sponsored by Kathy Rasmussen.
So Guardians of the Great North Pacific Casino is about North Pacific fisheries and management. And it's pretty terrific. I actually have, KBBI has in their archive a recording of Diana explaining how she would stand in the tide pool and catch octopus.
You should link to that.
And extract them.
On the Today's Book page.
I'll find it and make a link for you. Because
be wonderful
It's very interesting, and she was a fascinating and wonderful person. Mm-hmm. And of course, what she was doing, standing there pouring a little she said, you have to stand in the water for 15 or 20 minutes. I'm like, really? And then, so the octopus forgets you're there, or doesn't care that you're there. You become a fixture. And then she's explaining, and then you pour a little cap of bleach into the water, which is totally illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But who's going to stop Diana Tillion?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. So I will. I'll dig it up and have her tell the story of how she would catch octopus. And just, she would carry a syringe in her pocket and then
suck
the ink right out. And she was in her 70s when she told me this story. So, and she was still doing it. So, yes, Diana Tillion's Guardians of the Great North Pacific Casino and Pioneers of Homer.
We're going to have to get those books and have them in the cabin
when
Story Knife is open. Thank you. That's a good little check mark for me.
And then the other one I have is I haven't gotten to yet. I can't wait. Is Kate Mitchell's memoir, The Bag Lady at the End of the Road. And terrific old photos, and it looks good. And yeah, give it a chance. Seek out. There's a snobbishness, and I'll admit I have it in me too, that anything that comes from in town isn't as good as what you would get from out of town. So I want to challenge people to read their local authors, because there are terrific poets in this town. There are terrific writers in this town. Great history. Go. And, you know, I've been talking about bookstores. But if you want to hear about homesteaders and memoir writing and nonfiction writing about the area, avail yourself of the top drawer, right? Top drawer at the library?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
and go sit there and read Millie Martin's History of East End and the Trails. And there's all kinds of great stuff there.
What are you thinking, Terry?
What?
One of the things, one of the 10 and a half signs that you have a functional community is that you know your own story.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what you're doing, is you're advocating for homeroids to know their own story. Because I was just thinking about that. I was thinking, again, when, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm back
this is
on my
your,
original book.
This is your show, Dana.
Oh, God. I was thinking, again, when you read that book, you're naturally, you can't help yourself viewing it through the lens of your own community. And I was thinking, okay, in what way do we know our own community? Are we beginning to know our own community? And I thought immediately of the Sixtoon Word of the Week on KBBI, because we're hearing the language of the people who originally settled here. And, you know, okay, I don't remember every single Sixtoon word I hear, but I remember Aginchikuai. Don't forget it. And I remember words that I heard when I was a kid, like Alaka, and the Alaka'ai, the way he did it on the radio.
I just want to add a little color commentary for the people who don't know you. As a kid in Soldovia growing up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, as a kid in Soldovia, yeah. And it's a way into the local story that I really love. That's all. And it's one of those markers that makes us an hour town.
We'd love to hear what you're reading or what you are hoping to read. Or if you would like a recommendation for something to read, give us a call here on the coffee table. 235-7721. That's 235-7721. So, Dana. What's next?
Well, you just keep putting that. Oh, since the library hasn't called in yet, like I told them to, hint, hint.
Library.
I'm going to have to log roll for them. They have a book club, and it meets the fourth Tuesday of every month. And last month's recommendation, I didn't make the book club, I am sorry to say, but their recommendation was The Dry by Jane Harper. It's a mystery set in drought-stricken Australia, in the drought-stricken Australian outback in the present day, which starts out to be a murder-suicide of a family and then turns into just plain murder. It's an excellent, excellent read. I recommend it to anyone. And there's, it turns out it's going to be a series, and the second one of the series just came out. Oh, The Dry by Jane Harper.
Speaking of the library, something that I've listened to and something that I have on my to-listen-to list, I got a couple of audiobooks from the library this year. Earlier this summer, Ron Chernow's book, Alexander Hamilton, which the musical is based on. I borrowed that from the library through the online services as an audiobook to listen to while I was on my road trip around Alaska this summer. It is 36 hours long as an audiobook.
It's not written in couplets or anything, is it?
No. But I didn't realize it was going to be quite that long. Luckily, I spent almost 36 hours driving around the state that week on that trip. So absolutely fantastic. And one on my to-read list after the show this morning. I've got to drive up to Anchorage for meetings the rest of the week. Christopher Moore's Practical Demon Keeping.
Do tell. What's that about?
That is part of his Pine Cove trilogy. It's this little town, coastal California, that's kind of become this... It's a summer vacation-y place, and it's kind of become this little Christmas, community also. And... the other books in that series, The Lush Lizard of Melancholy Cove and The Stupidest Angel, both those books I've read this year. Melancholy Cove was book two, Stupidest Angel book three in that series. This is actually the first book in that trilogy, and it's about this guy who's road tripping with a demon. And they come across this little town, and this guy looks at it as an opportunity for him to, ditch the demon and leave him in this town, eating the town residents. Mm-hmm. And
wait, a people-eating demon? Okay, I'm liking this.
Yes.
Not just your, like, manifesting, spell-casting demon or
a zombie
bargain
demon.
For your soul kind of demon, but an actual flesh-eating demon.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher Moore, it's all, comedy bordering on, farce.
He's funny.
Quite honestly, absolutely fantastic, but it's strange. I've kind of read the trilogy in backwards order now, so.
I want to put
which
in a...
has not, made any of it less enjoyable, but audiobooks, both from borrowed from the Homer Public Library through through their website.
Or downloaded. I have, not recently, but audiobooks are really coming on strong. Speaking as an author who makes a living out of selling books, audiobooks are just, it never fails. Almost invariably, the first comment I get from somebody when I announce that I'm bringing out a new book, is it going to be an audio? I mean, there's always a comment on Stabna.com or on the Dana Maniacs page on Facebook or on my author page on Facebook. I mean, that's the first thing that somebody wants to know. And I was made aware of this entire subgenre of readers when I got an email from a long-haul truck driver who had he was on a cross-country trip and he'd rolled into El Paso, Texas, and he'd pulled up at the truck stop there and went inside, and they have rotating libraries of audiobooks at truck stops. I did not know this. And he said he was standing there
trying
to figure out.
You're not spending enough time in truck stops.
Evidently I'm not. This is my own ignorance. I'm confessing to it freely right here in front of God and everybody. So he's standing there looking at the audiobooks, however they're displayed, and he can't decide what he wants to read while he's driving to Tucson. And so he's standing next to somebody and somebody says, well, you should try the Kate Chukak series here, and hands him A Cold Day for Murder, which is the first Kate Chukak novel. So the guy puts it in his, reader, listener, whatever it is, and drives to Tucson. He's done with it by the time he gets to Tucson, and he goes into the rotating library to get the second book, and it's not there. So then he drives home to Los Angeles, gets on his computer, and writes to me in high indignation that I hooked him on these books. And I went and seen to making sure that all the series titles were available in every single rotating library and every truck stop. My bad. Sorry. But really, what this shows me is that there is just this incredible market. There's this incredible market out there for audiobooks, of which I was previously unaware. And I think it's fantastic. I'd also like to, if I can segue into new markets for books, and this isn't really new, and every teenager who is listening to my voice, even if they are, will just roll their eyes when they hear me say this, but graphic novels. We just read a graphic novel in my book club last month, and one of our readers is a very conservative reading person, in that she wants a book, not an ebook, and she wants the printed matter on the page in front of her. And she absolutely disbelieved the notion that lots of people are out there reading graphic novels. And I said, Franny, really, truly, there's lots and lots and lots of graphic novels out there. They're coming on strong. They're not just comic books anymore. So I wanted to recommend two graphic novels that I read this year, one called Home After Dark by David Small. It's about a teenage boy. He's abandoned by both his parents, and he's looking for anything or anyone to be his new family. It's a great story. It's great art. That lamped image of the light on over the door that Mr. Sion leaves for him is just, it's so poignant. And the second graphic novel I would like to recommend is The Wild Robot by Peter Brown. It's sort of a mix of graphic illustrations and text. And it's just a delightful novel about a lost robot finding her humanity through making friends with animals on an island on which she is marooned.
So while we're on the subject of graphic novels, I want to talk about Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast, which is the big read book this year at the library all across the nation.
Ew. Is it graphic?
And it's a graphic memoir of her parents' decline and death.
Like Persepolis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's terrific. And of course, Roz Chast is a New Yorker cartoonist. You might recognize her as a New Yorker cartoonist. And she's got the nervous line, the jagged line kind of. You would notice her. You would recognize her work if you see it. But that's Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast. And everybody's going to be talking about that when the big read comes up. I think that's early February. Pretty sure.
It's yeah. Right then, yeah.
Yeah, right around that time.
I know Pier 1 Theater's been talking about doing a playwriting workshop during that time, and I know there's going to be all kinds of events and things at the library. So get ready for that and get yourself a copy of Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?
Man, there's just no excuse. If you want a good read, you can find one in this town. Absolutely.
Speaking of looking for good reads, this is something you told me you wanted to talk about. What's in your to-read pile?
Ew. Oh, my to-read pile is legion. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction this year, and I'm moving over into fiction now, mostly because, you know, I'm at this point just looking for escape. And although I'm noticing that a lot of the books I'm picking are not necessarily that uplifting. For example, The Dog Stars by Peter Heller, which is the viewpoint of the last man in the world after an apocalyptic event. I haven't read it yet, so I don't know what that event is. And half the time, I don't think people are even going to know what that is. Anyway, so... Okay, that's another conversation, little segue I didn't need to go down. Okay, and then I also have my to-read shelf, the first two in Mary Robinette Kowal's, and I dread saying this out loud and on the air, Lady Astronaut series. I mean, who thought that was a good subtitle? But somebody really recommended them to me, so I went ahead I got them, and I am going to read at least the first one.
Are they new?
They're new.
But is it set at a time when you would be a lady scientist
to read,
or
to
a lady?
Read, not okay. Reading. Yeah, gotcha. To read. I don't know. I make
maybe
back.
It's establishing a time, a
yes,
place
but
and time.
Lady astronaut series. I bet you astronauts don't call themselves, female astronauts do not call themselves lady astronauts.
I know, but in the 50s and 60s, I wasn't actually alive in the 50s, believe it or not. But lady engineer, lady chemist, lady reporter, all those things. Maybe it's setting it in a specific time.
It may. It maybe. May. I notice you sprang to the defense of Mary Robinette Kowal. And the third one is, the third book that I have on my to-read shelf, among many others, I must admit, is called The Death of Kings by Rennie Arith. And for those of you who have not read the John Madden series by Rennie Arith, I can hardly recommend them. He's a British author, and he's writing crime fiction, and it involves the same characters, but one of the interesting things about the way he's writing this series is he makes massive jumps in time between the books. Like the first book takes place right after World War I. The second book takes place in the middle of World War II, and there's like a doodlebug, which is one of the big bombs that fell during the Blitz of London that I mean, actually manifestly impacts, may I just say, the case as well as the terrain. So I'm really looking forward. I'd missed it when it first came out and just recently found it and thought, oh boy, I get to go back and visit these cool people again.
All right. Fantastic. Kathleen.
You throw into me?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have something on your to-read list?
On the reread list, I don't know.
You know what? Yeah. What's on your reread list?
I can open up my next adult nonfiction.
Let's save that for a little bit.
So on my reread list, I went to the Homer Bookstore because it's their 40th anniversary and they're celebrating. And I wanted to celebrate with them because the Homer Bookstore and the people inside that building have done a great deal to build this town and make it what it is. And I told them to their faces, thank you for not giving up on us and staying with us and making a local Homer bookseller. You know, it's so important.
It's not every community anymore that has their own independent bookstore. Yeah. Yep. We're really lucky.
So I got a couple of things for the news department to put on the shelf back in the newsroom because it's election season and so everybody's gas bagging about the permanent fund. And so I have decided I'm not having any more conversations about the PFD with people who have not read Diapering the Devil, A Lesson for Oil-Rich Nations by Jay Hammond, the designer of the Permanent Fund, who said that not vetoing the legislative act abolishing Alaska's income tax was one of the biggest mistakes he ever made. That he felt like a lack of an income tax and the payment to every citizen would have added... What it does is creates an entitlement where people believe that there's nothing they have to give and they just get. And so he felt like it affected our culture, that it
negatively affected our culture, that people aren't expected to pay an income tax.
People raising a generation of people with their hands out.
Right. And so if I want to have PFD conversations, but it's a slim thing. It is just, it's a tract. It's 65 pages and it's got pictures and graphs and diagrams and Diapering the Devil, a lesson for oil rich nations. And if you're in the interest of something a little lighter, then he has three, I guess they call them autobiographies here, but these days this is a memoir. Tales of Alaska's Bush Rat Governor. And it is definitely very conversational and folksy and fun.
It sounds like he's talking.
Yes. Yeah. Well, here, chapter 28 on the PFD, Money, Money, Money is the title. Let me just read the first couple of sentences. When I became governor in 1974, the scent of anticipated oil revenues wafted like musk in the halls of the legislature. It did not require clairvoyance to sense our prudent good intentions were going to sluice away with the first turn of the money tap. So it's highly informed. And
well, he's an eyewitness to that era of history.
He's a drafter of the history of that era.
Yeah.
And so Tales of Alaska's Bush Rat Governor is the one I have in front of me. But there are three memoirs.
There's more tales.
Tales.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And whatever. Yeah. And whale's tales, whatever. But then also Diapering the Devil, A Lesson for Oil-Rich Nations, which is, as far as I'm concerned, required reading if you're going to have a conversation about what the permanent fund is and what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Or at least what it was intended to do, designed to do.
235-7721, if you'd like to join the conversation and talk about what you're reading, what you'd like to read, or ask Dana for a recommendation of something to read for yourself or for someone near and dear to you. That's 235-7721.
I always like to recommend a kid's book. And when I pick a kid's book to recommend on the air, it's a book that the adult is going to get a bang out of reading too, because if kids like a book, they're going to ask you to read it to them 9 million times that same night.
You better like it, right?
The adults better like it. So I have been following this website called Atlas Obscura. It's run by a guy named David Plotz. If anybody listens to the Slate Political Gabfest, you'll be familiar with him. He also wrote a really good book about taking a year off to read the Bible. And that was a really informative book. Page by page analysis. I skipped over Leviticus. Sorry. Too many laws.
Too many laws in Leviticus for you.
Atlas Obscura has come up with an explorer's guide. And it's called The World's Most Adventurous Kid. And it's 47 countries and 100 extraordinary places to visit. I defy anyone, adult or child, to pick up this book and not open it up to a place where you're absolutely fascinated by what's on the page. They aren't pictures, they're drawings, I think mostly. And there's a little impression of the globe with a little dot telling you where you are on the planet. And there's this one called Planning for the Future, the 10,000 Year Clock. Deep inside a West Texas mountain, there is an enormous clock that will run for a whopping 10,000 years. 200 feet tall, with gears 8 feet wide, it is powered by energy created when the mountain heats up during the day. The project's creators hope that it will help people think beyond today and focus on our future. To visit it, you have to hike for hours through the desert, find a jade door that opens into a pitch black tunnel, then climb a spiral staircase cut from the stone. At the top, you can wind the clock to hear a chiming song just for you. The chimes will never repeat the same time in all those 10,000 years.
Cool.
How cool is that? I mean, can you imagine any kid not being totally fascinated and wanting to get on a plane for Texas like immediately after reading that? Which is, I think, the whole point of this book. Anyway, it's the Atlas Obscura Explorer's Guide for the World's Most Adventurous Kid. And that's kid any age from 5 to 50 or 5, you know, more. Because I'm more.
We have our first caller. We have David on line one. Good morning, David. You got a book recommendation for us, or are you looking for one, or what you got for us?
No, I do have a book recommendation, and it's not a new book. I've been reading science fiction and fantasy ever since Rocket Ship Galileo by Heinlein back in fourth grade. And I just finished reading, like yesterday, the third novel in a... it's a King Arthur kind of a thing. Mary Stewart did a series, The Crystal Cave and the Hollow Hills, which I had read years and years ago. And then I came across this other book, The Last Enchantment. And I thought that was pretty much the end of the series, because it's like from 1979 or something like that. But it's all about King Arthur and Merlin, the magician. And it was, The Last Enchantment was such a great read. I finished it like 2 days ago. And when I got to like the last quarter of the book, I couldn't hardly get anything done around the house because I had to finish this thing. It's such a great read. And then I went online and found out that, oh, she's got two other follow-up novels. But what a great tale about Merlin, the magician, and then King Arthur, and of course it brings to mind Monty Python also. But this was definitely a more serious look at the whole history of what went on back in the day, and she does actually note that, you know. Okay, so some of what she had in this story was not necessarily up to par with the legend with Guinevere and King Arthur and some of that stuff. But what a great read. When I got to the last quarter of the book, I couldn't hardly get anything done around the house until I read a chapter or two. Mary Stewart and The Last Enchantment, and I don't even know what the final two books are called, I'll be looking to find those and put a close to this fine read that I've been enjoying for years and years now at this point.
I really love those books too, David. And one of the marvelous things about them is that she makes the character so real that you feel that you are in that time and place, and so human. She makes human beings out of legends, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
She definitely makes them, you know, real people, and brings them to life in a way that a lot of books just don't do. So
yes.
That'd be my recommendation for a good winter read this season.
Thanks, David.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Good show.
Thanks, Kathleen. Before we get on to anything else. Let's see what your second blind date with a book is.
So my second blind date with a book, adult nonfiction, Wives of Calabrian Mafia Battle for Justice for Their Children and Themselves, Not All Survive. So that's what it says on the front. And it is The Good Mothers, the true story of women who took on the world's most powerful mafia. Well, all right, an unprecedented look inside a deadly and obscenely wealthy branch of the Italian mafia, and the electrifying story of women who risked everything to bring it down. So I'm thinking murder and double-crossing and shadowy alleys with
all
people,
the good stuff.
Everything you want, as seen in The New Yorker. This is by Alex Perry.
And who doesn't like a good mob story?
And you know I love a book where you open just past the flyleaf and there's a map for you.
Love
this
maps.
Is, yes.
Yes.
Ooh, it's one of my indicators, especially with fantasy.
Yeah, well, that too. And the fact that I have to, naturally, I address this from a writer's viewpoint. If a publisher actually goes to all the time and expense of creating a map for that book, you know that they put a little time and effort into all other parts of it as well, including editing and investing in the author and all that stuff. So a map is a very good indicator of a book you should spend money on.
All right, fantastic. Want to change this up a little. I'm kind of surprised Dana with this idea when she came in the door. But rereading books?
Oh yeah.
You know, is there there things that you go back to from time to time and reread?
Oh yeah. I just everybody knows about Jim Butcher from the Harry Dresden series. There's like, I don't know, 12 books in that series. I think there's going to be 20. But a lot of people don't know that he also wrote a 6-book epic fantasy series. Millennia ago, a Roman legion, Butcher doesn't say so, but I'm guessing his inspiration was the Lost Ninth, somehow wound up on the planet Karna, where they tamed the local Furies, which gave them magical powers. Ever after, they have triumphed over their hostile neighbors to evolve into the nation of Alera, until the advent of the Vord, which is their most formidable opponent to date. The entire story is seen through the eyes of a young boy named Tavi, and continues on over years until the end of the book, and I'm not going to give anything away, but I will say it is the best Lost Heir book, a series of books I have ever read. And I mean, if you like Tolkien, if you like any of the epic fantasy series, I'm telling you, The Furies of Calderon the first title is The Furies of Calderon, and by Jim Butcher. I can't recommend them strongly enough.
We just had a caller call in and ask what we thought about or to recommend Patrick Rothfuss's books, The Name of the Wind and A Wise Man's Fear. So I'm going to pass those on to you, Dana, the title, so you can put them on the list. Okay. And I'm just looking at them now. I just brought them up because I'm not familiar. You guys?
No.
Okay, well, then we've got a recommendation. And it's The Wise Man's Fear is King Killer Chronicle Day 2, The Name of the Wind, King Killer Chronicles. Yeah, so I'm going to have to look into it.
There's another one with a really long title. I can't remember the title.
Uh-oh.
In the same series.
Let's see.
He did a thing where he wrote a different... He wrote... There was a minor character, and I forget the first or second book, and he wrote a standalone, like a novella.
So 2007, The Name of the Wind. 2011, The Wise Man's Fear. And the latest is The Doors of Stone. But you're probably... Look, it's... Let's see. Is this... If it's the same author, no, not sure.
Okay,
but well, I'm gonna have to.
Yeah,
I have to get into it.
That's okay. So, was the caller's name given by any chance?
No,
rats. Okay,
but we do have a caller online.
Yeah, we have Abe on line one. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Hey, appreciate the show. Appreciate the bookstores and library. I just heard on last week or two about, I think it was in England, they were starting to make paperbacks that had a vertical flip over instead of a side-by-side left and right page. And I'm kind of an old guy, so I like to read in bed. And my thumb can't hold the book open all the time. But anybody that's writing books and publishing should start thinking about this, because it'd be like looking at a Nook book or a flat screen, you know. So I could lay on either side and read, or wouldn't have to hold my book open. And I just thought that was a wonderful idea. So, and that's all just my comment for the day. Thank you.
Sounds like good design.
So,
thanks, Abe.
Thanks. I even have a British publisher, and I've never heard of such a thing. I'll have to ask.
Let's go back to the phones. Larry on line two. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this program. I think Kate Mitchell's memoir is really hot. She starts out saying, I would put on a tin bill and pick with the chickens before I'd do something, quoting her mother. And then she has a quote about Mike Kennedy later in the book buying their bus, which helped them to make payments on their new store, and saying Mike came in with a reefer hanging out of his mouth, or I thought it was a reefer, it was hand-rolled. And then he just peeled off some $100 bills, and that's what got us along to the next step, with Mike Kennedy owning the secondhand store in Homer at the time. But beyond that, I think that Shadowed Times by local author George Harbison, Alaska Stories of Another Age, is the most lyrical local book I've read since Eva Salidis.
Oh, wow, that's quite an accolade.
No kidding.
And... I got that at the Homer Bookstore. Meanwhile, across town at Old Inlet Books, I got The Rise of Icicle Seafoods from the roots of Alaska statehood, which has quite a few Homer area characters and other people that you will recognize as helping Icicle Seafoods along the way. And also from there, the Phryne Fisher mystery series, you know, she had a...
Carrie Greenwood.
Yes, by Carrie Greenwood, and she had these terrific programs on PBS, which were a little bit hot, but I must say, when you actually read the books, this is as hot as Dana Stabenow.
Ah.
So that's my list, but I think that Shadowed Times needs a bigger audience, and of course, Kate Mitchell is going to rise to the top of the bestseller list around here. That's a very amusing book.
Yeah, I haven't cracked it yet. I can't wait to get into it. So is this by chance Larry Smith?
Yes.
Larry Smith, who wrote the foreword to the book I'm holding right now, Diapering the Devil, A Lesson for Oil-Rich Nations?
Well, we not only did that, but, well, you know, after Governor Hammond died, I was asked to help with some stuff around the place. I found the manuscript on his computer, and my wife Pam became the principal editor of that, and we tried to get Hammond's publisher from the past, but he had fallen on such hard times, didn't happen, tried several things. So eventually, we published it itself as the Kachemak Resource Institute, and the first edition, the state librarian, sent the money and the postage and a list of the 167 libraries in Alaska, and the Homer Public Library folks mailed them out. So the first edition went exclusively to the libraries, and then the second edition is what's available now. Well, anyway, we didn't mean to get into the publishing game. Costs a lot of money.
Yeah, it does.
But it was well worth letting all that hard work that the guy did on behalf of all of us be seen. Well, so anyway, thank you for the program.
Thanks for the color commentary.
You bet. Thanks, Larry.
Bye.
We're quickly coming up on the end of the hour, so I want to make sure. Yeah, already, Dana. Is there any book that you haven't had a chance to talk about that you really want to talk about?
Well, I'd like to give a plug for When the English Fall by David Williams. It's the apocalypse seen through Amish eyes. Now, just let that sink in for a minute.
They're ready for the apocalypse.
It defies credulity to call a novel on such a subject lyrical, but this one is. And there is also wonderfully understated, I would almost even call it British humor in it, when the world is ending. So, and it's also a very short book, and it's not one of those, I mean, there seems to be an awful lot of books lately written about the apocalypse and what's going to happen after. In fact, you know, I have one on my to-read shelf. But this is one that is different, and I don't know if this guy was Amish or is Amish, the author, but he made me believe that I was in and of that community while I was reading that book, and it's a very admirable community.
Okay, great, fantastic. And just real quick, want to give a plug for, I've spent a little bit of time this summer and fall with the Founding Fathers. I get on these jags of specific areas, you know, Hamilton, I read earlier this summer and saw the musical when I was down south. But two books by Joseph Ellis, who's one of the premier historian authors of the Revolutionary Generation, Founding Brothers, The Revolutionary Generation, about Hamilton, Jefferson, Adams, Washington, and that group, and First Family, about Abigail and John Adams. Read both those this fall. Absolutely fantastic, and there's more of his stuff on my to-read shelf with that. And looks like we're coming up to about 3.5 minutes before the top of the hour. Real quick, one, give you the last word, Dana.
Okay, how about, this is an older book, and probably everybody in the world has read it except me. It's called Population 485, Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time by Michael Perry. Michael Perry comes home to New Auburn, Wisconsin, population 485, as you might expect, and reintegrates himself back into society by joining the local volunteer fire department. The book begins with one death and ends with another, and they are both agonizing because inherent in being a volunteer first responder is the fact that you will be responding to scenes involving people you know and sometimes people you love. But it also is rich with humor, and one scene I remember, because this is set in Wisconsin. He does, to keep fit, because he's a first responder, he jogs every morning around the town of New Auburn. And one morning when he's coming home in the dark, he's going up a hill, and coming down the hill are a bunch of drunk Amish kids on skateboards. They're doing that thing where the Amish kids, you know, go out and terry hoot around before deciding whether they're...
Springer.
Thank you. That's it. Yeah. And he doesn't say much about it. All he says was, there's really nothing in life to prepare you for something like that. And then he moves on. But it's filled with stuff like that all the way through the book. His books are terrific.
And what's the title?
It is called Population 485, Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time. If you ever wanted to know how local first responders feel, I would be willing to bet that he encapsulates that pretty well in this book.
Okay, and with that, Dana, you've got the last word on books for the Coffee Table program this morning. It's 2 minutes before 10 o'clock. This is KBBI AM 890 Hummer. My name's Terry Renzel. I've been joining you this morning with Dana Stabenow, Kathleen Gustafson. Thanks for listening. And Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is up next.